Good morning, everybody. I'm going to call this meeting of the State Government Finance and Elections Committee to order. Today is February 17th, 2022. And pursuant to House Rule 10.01, this meeting is being held virtually. Mr. Brinks, can you take the roll?
Thank you. Chair Nelson.
I'm here.
Nelson is present. Vice Chair Carlson.
Carlson is present.
Carlson is present. Representative Nash.
Nash present.
Nash is present. Representative Bonner. Representative Drazkowski.
Present.
Drazkowski is present. Representative Elkins.
Elkins present.
Elkins is present. Representative Greenman.
Present.
Greenman is present. Representative Cleborne.
Cleborne present.
Cleborne is present. Representative Kosnick.
Kosnick present.
Kosnick is present. Representative Mason. Representative New Brindley.
Present.
New Brindley is present. Representative Pawlowski.
Pawlowski present.
Pawlowski is present. Representative Quam.
Present.
Quam is present. Representative Bonner.
Bonner present.
Bonner is present. Representative Mason. With that, Chair, we have a quorum.
We have a quorum. So first item on our agenda is approval of the minutes from February 15th. Representative Claiborne, did you get a chance to look at the minutes?
Yes, Mr. Chair, and I move that the minutes be approved. Thank you.
Motion has been made to approve the minutes from February 15th. Everybody want to unmute? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Our minutes have been approved. For the next thing on our agenda is we have a presentation from our Attorney General, Keith Ellison, with his budget request for the office. Attorney General Ellison, welcome to the committee. Identify yourself for the tape and then proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Ranking Member and all members of the committee. Very grateful to be with you as always. This is an important opportunity for our office to talk about our budget request, but also to just talk about the office and update members on some things that we're doing. Let me start by just talking to you about the role of the Attorney General's office and the monetary value that the office adds to our state and our constituents. The role of the Attorney General dates well before the founding of the United States. It arose in English common law in the 13th century. The United States, there are 57 attorneys general in every state, U.S. territory, District of Columbia, and the federal government has a attorney general as well. Of those 57 jurisdictions, 43 are elected independently, and the remainder are appointed, but five more serve the people because they may only be removed for cause. State and territorial attorneys general have historically been leaders in many of the country's most important consumer justice cases against big tobacco in the 1990s, against mortgage lender fraud in the housing crisis in the 2000s, against pharmaceutical companies, fraudulent student loan lenders, opioid manufacturers and distributors, and these cases have been bipartisan with both Republican and Democratic attorneys general joining in on behalf of consumers. Most recently, attorneys general have been raising and holding accountable issues concerning big tech companies. Minnesota's constitution establishes the office of the attorney general to serve as the state's chief legal officer. The role and duties of the attorney general arise in the constitution, the state statutes, particularly Chapter 8 and case law. The Attorney General has four main duties. One, the Attorney General represents more than 100 state agencies, boards, and commissions. Representing these agencies is our bread and butter. Number two, the Attorney General also protects the people of the state of Minnesota as the chief enforcer of Minnesota's consumer protection antitrust and charities laws. In Minnesota Statute 8.31, the legislature has directed the Attorney General to investigate and prosecute, quote, violations of law in this state respecting unfair, discriminatory, and otherwise unlawful practices in business, commerce, or trade, unquote. Third, when appropriate, the Attorney General defends the constitutionality of state statutes. This is a role we're called upon to play fairly regular basis. Fourth, the Attorney General is a partner to the county attorneys across Minnesota, especially in smaller counties, in taking on important criminal prosecutions when they don't have the resources to handle the cases. It is important to note that Minnesota's Attorney General's office, unlike some other Attorney General offices around the country, does not have independent authority to prosecute criminal cases, except in cases of Medicaid fraud, which is the sole area where we have original criminal jurisdiction. Under Minnesota Statute 8.1, however, we may prosecute criminal cases if we are asked to by either the county or appointed by the governor. Now, year over year, the Attorney General's office returns money to the state coffers and directly to Minnesota taxpayers. For state coffers, this takes the form of direct settlements that we reach, whether that money goes to the general fund or to dedicated funds. For example, there have been occasions. Last year, we recovered $81 million from big tobacco corporations for the past due obligations under the 1998 tobacco settlement. That $81 million goes into the general fund, and additional $10 million will go into the general fund each year thereafter. Had my office not taken this matter to court, the state would not have recovered the money. Last August, my office joined the historic $26 billion multi-state settlement agreement with three pharmaceutical distributors and opioid manufacturers, including Johnson & Johnson. Over 18 years, Minnesota stands to receive $300 million from these settlements alone for money for opioid treatment, remediation, and prevention. Also, after months of very hard work by my office and assistance from members of the legislature, we received and reached a historical agreement last fall that 75% of these funds will go directly to cities and counties hardest hit by the epidemic, and 25% of it will be overseen by the State Opioid Epidemic Response Advisory Council, which the legislature established in 2019 for this purpose. To date, 232 Minnesota counties and cities have voted to approve the solution, provided the legislature enacts some necessary changes to the state law. This money will start having a positive effect in our communities as early as April. There are many more examples that I can share today of both larger and smaller settlements that have returned millions of dollars directly to state coffers, but please inquire if you'd like to learn more. The Attorney General's office also puts money directly into the pockets of Minnesotans, whether through litigation or mediation. Examples of litigation that help that directly help Minnesotans include, last year, my office reached the conclusion of a seven-year-long lawsuit against now-defunct Minnesota School of Business and Globe University that is finally putting $40 billion in restitution and debt relief back into the pockets of students that were defrauded. Last month, we reached a settlement with Navient, one of the nation's largest student loan services, to provide $14 million in relief to Minnesota students to resolve allegations of widespread unfair and deceptive student loan servicing practices and abuses in originating predatory student loans. Earlier this month, we reached a settlement with Wilmer-based landlord to refund nearly 900 tenant households a utility surcharge that it was illegally imposing on them, as well as late fees. These refunds will put back $60,000 into the pockets of tenants in Wilmer and Marshall areas. When it comes to mediation, in the last fiscal year, our Consumer Action Division intervened directly with companies on consumers' behalf and returned $7.8 million back directly to Minnesotans. This represents nearly 40% increase in money returned to Minnesotans over the prior year. I'm proud of this I'm proud of the staff in our Consumer Action Division. They answer 40 hours a week calls, and they have returned and answered complaints on behalf of Minnesotans every day, and to the tune of about 61,000 calls and a substantial amount of money to consumers every day. Now, members, please let me turn to my budget. Now, I'd like to start by thanking you all for the investments you've made already in our office over the last two biennium. They have made and continue to make positive difference in our ability to serve the state and the people of Minnesota. I'd like to report back to you on what we've done. We've made significant investments in information technology that are bringing our office into the 21st century. We've hired new lawyers, retained others, and kept the salary gap between our office and other large public law offices from growing. We have not closed the gap. We've just stopped it from growing. We've hired staff for a new unit to fight wage theft, again, helping give Minnesotans money that they have earned but been deprived of with budgetary resources and new enforcement authority you gave us. We've hired staff to expand our antitrust enforcement, which is of particular importance to people in the agricultural community and in greater Minnesota. We have a lot more work to do and a lot more things to work on. Let me direct you to an important slide, the one in front of you. You'll see that in the fiscal year 2023, our general fund appropriation is currently $26,000.19 million. By way of comparison, 20 years ago, the general fund appropriation for the Attorney General's office appropriation was $26.83 million, almost the same. But when you factor in inflation, that appropriation from 20 years ago is the equivalent of $38.6 million in today's dollars. This means that our 2023 appropriation is worth 30% less in inflation-adjusted dollars than it was 20 years ago. In those 20 years, Minnesota's population has actually grown. Society has become more complex and litigious. The needs of the state have increased. The challenges Minnesotans face affording their lives and living with dignity, safety, and respect are more daunting today. Markets have concentrated. Large corporations are bigger and have bigger legal staffs, and yet we have fewer resources to defend Minnesotans. We must close the gap between those challenges and the resources the Attorney General's office has to help Minnesotans meet their needs. Allow me to make two more points about overall budget before I go into our two change items. Number one, where our money comes from. 56% of the revenue comes from our general fund appropriation, with 28% for partner revenue, meaning the fees Minnesota agencies, boards, and commissions pay our offices for our services and the rest from other sources. Two, where we spend our money. I'd like you to know that. You'll see on the next slide that this is a straightforward proposition. 81% of the money that we receive goes to salaries and benefits and supports our people, with the rest going to administrative expenses, including essential costs like rent and utilities. Now, on to the change items. Mr. Chairman and members, I'd like to now draw your attention to our change item requests. We have two requests in front of you. In order, they are number one, investments in criminal enforcement. For the last 3 years, we have been asking, but have been not successful in getting more criminal prosecutors. Number two, investing in operating adjustment, including retention of talent and right-sizing critical administrative staffing. On the issue of criminal enforcement, by helping greater Minnesota county attorneys prosecute violent criminal behavior and other complex crime that harm consumers and businesses, we have been able to make a positive difference. But the demand is still substantial. And I can assure you that my colleagues and partners in, at the county level could would very much welcome a greater capacity for the Attorney General's office to help. So would our large counties. Hennepin, Ramsey, Washington often have to pick up the slack when we simply cannot say yes to the requests of our county partners. And so it would assist everyone if we had greater capacity, not only for criminal prosecution at the district court level, but also at the appellate level. As I said earlier, under Section 8.01, a county attorney may request the Attorney General to prosecute a case with it. It is almost always the case that the county attorneys who help, who request this help from the Attorney General's office are from Greater Minnesota, not always. They have ample talent and excellent lawyers, but they don't always have the resources or the experience in prosecuting homicide cases and others. Some counties have a very small county prosecutor office, and they do rely on our help. We rely on their help. We work together, and we want to be there to do our part for public safety for all Minnesotans. I'm very proud of the staff of our criminal division. In just 3 years, and with only three full-time prosecutors, up from only one when I took office, they have investigated, made charging decisions about, and prosecuted 33 cases of murder, manslaughter, criminal vehicular homicide, and sexual assault with outstanding results. They are making a major contribution to public safety in every corner of our state. Unfortunately, the division was reduced over the course of years in prior years, which cut into the level of service that the office can provide. Because of this reduction, the AGO has not had the capacity to fully lend support in prosecuting the full range of violent or complex crimes, high-impact white-collar crimes, or cross-county crimes such as sex trafficking and financial exploitation. With additional resources, we will rebuild the office's capacity to be in full partnership with our counties and to take pressure off of our larger counties who often have to pick up the slack. We're all in this together. We help each other, except for the Attorney General's office over the course of the last 20 years has reduced emphasis on criminal. We are re-emphasizing it. We have tripled the size of the prosecutors who do this work full time, but we need more help. Our request is for $1.821 million in fiscal year 23 and ongoing, which is a 3.3 increase to our base budget. Let me finish this summary of this item by thanking you for approving this request twice now and in the past and contributing to its passage in the full House each time. I am grateful for your confidence and support. Finally, talent retention and right-sized staffing. Our second request is to maintain the level of compensation that we can bring to bear for our excellent staff. Our staff are like anyone else. They have family needs and family pressures. We'd like to keep them and maintain our institutional expertise and memory. To do that, we have got to keep pace with other public law offices. The Attorney General's office is the second largest public law office in Minnesota. Few law offices in Minnesota handle the range and complexity of civil litigation as the Minnesota Attorney General's office. Our clients include more than 100 state agencies, boards, and commissions, as well as the people of Minnesota. We handle more than 7,000 legal files a year. Retaining an expert workforce is essential for the AGO to fulfill its duty to the state and serve and protect Minnesotans. Our attorneys earn less than public attorneys for the local metro counties and almost a third of the attorneys in the U.S. Attorney's Office. This gap in earnings can make it challenging for us to retain our public interest-minded attorneys. Sometimes our attorneys leave us for these public offices because they can earn more for their families there and still serve the public. When they do, their knowledge, their expertise leaves with them, and that is to the disinterest and disadvantage of the people of the state of Minnesota. The capacity of the administrative, non-legal side of the office has always been tight. While employees of the office are very resourceful, they have to be, and continue to serve their colleagues well, the capacity of critical internal administrative functions like human resources, information technology, and finance to meet the needs of the office are stretched, not to the limits, beyond the limits. Minnesotans would also be better served by enhancing policy, communications, and outreach functions of our office. These functions require enhancements to handle increasing complexity of the work of the Attorney General's office and to contribute to a 21st century Attorney General's office that fully meets the needs of its clients and all Minnesotans. Our operating adjustment request is for $2.335 million in FY22 and ongoing, which is a 4.3 increase to our base budget. In closing, Mr. Chairman, thank you for your time, thank you for your attention, and thank you for your service to our state. It's been my pleasure to serve as Minnesota Attorney General, and I'm prepared for any questions.
And I see on the list here, you've got two other people that needed. I see Karen Sunneman from the Winona County. Is she here to testify?
She is. Support?
And if Ms. Sunneman, can you state your name for the tape? And quickly, we've got some questions and we've got other bills we have to take care of today. So Ms. Sunneman, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Nelson. And I understand your time is valuable and short. So good morning. I'm Karen Sonneman. I've served as the Winona County Attorney for 11 years now, and I also chair the Winona County Criminal Justice Court and Council. And prior to being county attorney, I was an assistant public defender for 20 years, covering Winona County, Houston, Wabasha, Fillmore, and Olmsted in the 3rd Judicial District. I've been on the board of directors for the Minnesota County Attorneys Association for the past 10 years, and I currently serve as its treasurer. You've received letters from many of my county attorney colleagues, including MCAA President and Carver County Attorney Mark Metz, expressing their support for the AG's office supplemental budget request. We speak as one voice on this matter because this funding request is so critical to the effective prosecution of criminal cases across the state, but particularly so in Greater Minnesota, where many of the county attorney offices have only one, two, or three attorneys. Supplemental funding for the AG's office will help all county attorneys deliver justice across the state, especially in the prosecution of complex, serious, and otherwise unique cases we are not equipped to handle alone. Under the leadership of Attorney General Ellison, I have seen firsthand on multiple occasions the return of the AG's office as an effective resource and a partner that county attorney offices can count on once again to help us not just in criminal prosecution, but also in civil law matters. By supporting the AG's office's supplemental budget request, you will be making a smart investment in public safety in the communities each of you and your colleagues in the legislature represent, in the place where it matters most and provides the biggest bang for the buck, at the local level in your home district. Thank you for your time today, and please contact me if you have any questions or want further information. Thank you.
And Representative Nash, we have your hand up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just actually a question for you. In the last budget negotiations that were concluded last year, you did have the AG's office funded fully, as is the rest of state government, unless I missed that. Is that correct?
We funded the requests that were there that was worked out between us and the Senate. I know that the last budget cycle, because there was some uncertainty of what was going to happen with our budget and with our revenues because of the pandemic, that I know the governor stressed all the departments to limit their budget requests. I know that the Attorney General's office, if I remember correctly, we did not give them all that they asked for. Again, so that's why you're coming back now, I believe.
And Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Nash.
Yeah, thank you. I do appreciate you pointing out that state government was fully funded and that we took care of that in the budget year of the biennium. Thank you.
Any other questions? Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a follow-up question on that to the Attorney General, because I believe that that your budget has been relatively flat when you account for inflation sort of over a longer period of time. So can you just give us a sense of why you need this in terms of where your budget needs to go to address the needs of the state?
Well, very directly, for the last 20 years, we were not just flatlined, we were cut. And when you add into inflation, we were cut by as much as 30%. Ray Smith from my office is here. He's our budget leader. And if Ray is available, he can give you very fine detail. But in the last round, you know, we did ask for funds to help us on criminal. We've been asking for it ever since I've been Attorney General because we need it. We haven't been able to get the support. When I first arrived at the Attorney General's office, we had one person who worked only on criminal prosecution. Now we have three, mostly because we've had to just rearrange the budget to accommodate that need. But the truth is that, you know, we need the help to keep Minnesotans safe. If there's one thing the government must ensure, it's people and safety. And so we're trying to step up to do that, but we need the help of the legislature to achieve that. I don't know if Ray is available, but Ray, maybe you could add on if you are available to a representative's question.
I am available.
Thank you, Attorney General Ellison. Members, we're going to have the Attorney General before us when this bill comes up. We'll have lots more time for questions when the bill comes up. The supplemental budget bills are actually filed, so if we can. Move on from this. We got other bills we have to take up today. Representative Greenman, you're fine with that. I see you're shaking your head. Representative Ellison, we can dig deeper into this when we get the bill in front of us.
Well, appreciate everyone's time and attention. Thank you. And we can answer questions offline as well. Thank you.
Thank you. The next item on our agenda is Representative Bolden. House File 3175. Is Representative Mason here yet? I don't see her on my list here. I will move to adopt the division report from House File 3175 from the Local Government Committee. Members, if you want to unmute, all in favor of the division report from the Local Government Committee on House File 3175, please say aye.
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 Opposed? The ayes have it. I'll move the House File 3175 be referred to the General Register. Representative Bolden, present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. House File 3175 is a straightforward cleanup bill. It repeals redundancies in zoning and planning laws for Minnesota townships. Specifically, it repeals Chapter 366, which grants townships the authority to do zoning and township planning. The same authorities that are granted to townships in Chapter 366 are also listed in Chapter 462. So in addition to the repeal of Chapter 366, this bill includes a redirect to Chapter 462. This was a request from the Minnesota Association of Townships for any township that still may cite Chapter 366 in their township documents. So next, I'd like to invite Mr. Steve Fenske to testify. Mr. Fenske is the general counsel for the Minnesota Association of Townships. He'll speak to the application of this bill and the confusions created from the current redundancies in state law. So thank you, Mr. Chair. I look forward to questions and ask for member support.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Fenske. Please identify yourself for the tape and proceed.
Good morning. I'm Steve Fenske with the Minnesota Association of Townships. Thank you, Chair Nelson, for the attention to this, and thanks to Representative Bolden for bringing the bill. Representative Bolden mentioned this is it's cleaning up confusion. Right now we have two sets of statutory powers. They developed independently, and the part that we're looking to have repealed are the old zoning powers. Okay, these developed as early as the 1930s, but by 1982, townships were allowed to use the same zoning powers that cities use. And since then, they've overwhelmingly expressed their support for using the powers in 462. So we really just don't even see townships using 366 if they enact a new ordinance. A few townships still have a leftover ordinance that used 366 as their basis for it. And that's why you see the redirect language, so that there's continuity of land use management in those townships. They won't lose anything. The second page of the letter that I've submitted, what I've tried to do is take every power that's listed in 366, in the zoning sections in 366, and show where they already exist in 462, to show that townships are not going to lose anything in doing this. It'll just be a transfer over to that section for those that have 366, and those that continue to use 462 won't be impacted at all. I think this is going to reduce confusion for townships, for individuals, landowners, developers who are trying to understand what governs them, and give us the chance to get rid of some law, a bunch that is not used these days.
Thank you, Mr. Fenske. Any questions of the author or Mr. Fenske? Just wait a second here. I see no questions. Representative Bolden, if you want to wrap up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, this is just a straightforward cleanup bill, just looking to reduce redundancies and confusion. And so I would request member support. Thank you.
I see Representative Drazkowski has put his hand up. Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A question for Mr. Fenske. Mr. Fenske, how many townships use 366 currently?
Morning, Representative. Morning, Representative. I don't have a number, but we also don't have a track of all the townships that have zoning. My 6 years of time working with townships, part of my job is to take calls and emails to try and help them out on a daily basis. I may have encountered one township or two in the last 6 years among thousands of contacts. And I get questions regularly about zoning, but they're based on 462. So I anticipate a very low impact to this bill to any township. And as it has the redirect, even if they have a 366 statutory power there, even if they based it on 366, they're going to have continuity of management through 462.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Fenske, can you just kind of walk us through if a township wants to do zoning, just walk us through how that happens.
Sure.
Mr. Fenske.
Usually, sorry, Mr. Chair, I'm interrupting you. Thank you. Usually, because this can happen in different ways, usually some event comes up where there's a proposed land use, and the township may say, do we want that, or how do we want that to happen? In the normal course, they would gather together some group, often a planning commission, people in the community, to start to look at, well, do we want to take this on? And they'd look at whether or not to adopt an ordinance, and through that, would they take on a comprehensive plan, planning out where development's going to happen. And for a township, that's usually going to be near a city if there's a lot of development, and that's just a matter of resources and locations. Anywhere from, I'd say, 3 months to a year in that initial planning process, they'll decide if they want an ordinance. And if they do, then they'll pursue writing an ordinance. And it's often going to be very similar to what other cities and townships have. The professionals that would help them, whether they be attorneys or land use management professionals, often use the same kind of language. And so they take the standard language, work out what they're looking for, and then the town board would adopt that language as the ordinance. That gets published, it gets recorded with the county recorder. They also work with the county land use management office through that process, because towns have to be consistent with the county when they take on these powers.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Fenske.
With that, I will renew my motion that House File 3175 be referred to the General Register. Mr. Brinks, please take the roll.
Thank you. Chair Nelson.
Aye.
Nelson votes aye. Vice Chair Carlson.
Carlson aye.
Carlson votes aye. Representative Nash.
Nash, aye.
Nash votes aye. Representative Bonner.
Bonner votes aye.
Bonner votes aye. Representative Drazkowski.
Aye.
Drazkowski votes aye. Representative Elkins.
Elkins votes aye.
Elkins votes aye. Representative Greenman.
Aye.
Greenman votes aye. Representative Cleburne.
Cleburne, aye.
Cleburne votes aye. Representative Kosnick.
Aye.
Kosnick votes aye. Representative Mason. Representative New Brindley. Representative Pawlowski.
Pawlowski, aye.
Pawlowski votes aye. Representative Quam.
Aye.
Quam votes aye. Representative Mason. Representative New Brindley. With that, Chair, with a vote of 11 ayes and 2 abstains, the motion prevails.
Motion prevails. The bill is on its way to the General Register. Thank you, Representative Bolden. The next bill I have on the agenda is House File 208, Representative Freiberg's bill. Move it down here so I can see it.
208.
House File 208. I'll move House File 208 to be referred to the Agriculture Committee. Representative Freiberg.
Thanks. Would you like to move the A22 amendment? That would put the bill in the shape I was.
First, we have to put the bill in front of us, Representative Freiberg, and then we do the amendments.
Okay, so would you like me to describe the bill overall now then?
Representative Freiberg, you have an amendment. You say, I've got two amendments listed here, an A1 and an A22. Do you want to put those on first or?
The A22 is a delete all. The A1 might have been introduced a while ago. Maybe Mr. Gehring can confirm. I don't think I need the A1 anymore. The A22 is the one I would like to have put on.
Representative Freiberg, I'll move the A22 amendment, and Mr. Gehring, do we need the A1 amendment?
Mr. Chair, no. So if you do the A22, that should take care of the date updates that are in the A1 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Gehring. So I'll move the A22 amendment. It's a delete all amendment. And members, if you want to unmute, and we'll vote on the A22 amendment to put the bill in the shape that the author would like it. All in favor of the A22 amendment, please say aye.
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 Opposed? The ayes have it. The bill's in the shape representative wants. Representative Freiberg, if you want to describe the bill and your A22 as it is now with the A22 amendment.
Thank you, Chair Nelson. So House File 208 would create a companion animal board, and the bill addresses a clear problem. So currently there's no state board, council, or department with specific focus and expertise relative to companion animals. So we have state agencies dedicated to livestock and wildlife, but nothing for companion animals. And we've seen it all during COVID, just how important pets are to families. I have a kitten in the room that I got from the Animal Humane Society. I was going to hold him up kind of as a prop, but he just ran out of the room. So if he comes back, I'll make sure you can see him. So the bill would create a board with the ability to focus on enforcing laws related to the licensing, regulation, and welfare of companion animals. It would provide communication and education for issues related to companion animals. And finally, it would collaborate with public, private, and nonprofit sectors for promotion of services and resources. The bill would do nothing to the existing authority of the Board of Animal Health to regulate zoonotic disease. This authority is spelled out in Minnesota Statute Section 35.05, and House File 208 makes no changes to this section of law. So the board's authority to regulate zoonotic diseases remains intact. Now, part of the reason to support this bill is because it will allow the Board of Animal Health to focus on this core mission. The Office of the Legislative Auditor recently conducted an audit of the Board of Animal Health and found several deficiencies in its handling of chronic wasting disease among deer and elk. Having a companion animal board will allow the Board of Animal Health to focus on controlling the spread of zoonotic diseases, something which it has failed to do effectively to date. There's nothing earth-shattering about this bill. Companion animals are pets. This bill uses the existing definition of pet and companion animal that are in Minnesota law. Companion animals are not agricultural products. Companion animals are about companionship with people, and that requires different skills and expertise in the people conducting outreach and regulation related to them. So that's why it's vital to establish this board not a task force or committee that's under the Board of Animal Health. The Board of Animal Health needs to refocus on the control of dangerous animal disease. So there are extensive materials submitted with your committee packets and that are available on the committee website showing the widespread support for this bill. It includes documents from veterinarians, the Minnesota Humane Society in St. Paul, an animal rescue organization in Princeton, the Tri-County Humane Society in St. Cloud, the Animal Humane Society, which is in the district I represent, the Center to Study Human-Animal Relationships and Environments at the University of Minnesota, social workers, veterinary employees, the Minnesota Spay-Neuter Project, other animal welfare organizations, and organizations that help feed companion animals. So I'd encourage members to support this bill, and I'd like to turn it over to the testifiers.
And I've got a list of testifiers here, and if you can keep your testimony to between 2 and 3 minutes, it'd be helpful for us to do this bill and get it moved on. First person on my list is Ann Olson, Executive Director of Animal Folks. If you want to state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Yes, Chair Nelson and members of the committee, my name is Ann Olson, and I am the Executive Director of Animal Folks. We deal with animal protection and animal welfare efforts in Minnesota. We strongly support House File 208, which will create a companion animal board. This bill is supported by over 25 organizations and thousands of Minnesota residents. As Representative Freiberg explained, Minnesota government right now is structured around livestock and wildlife, but nothing for companion animals, and this has been a problem. The Companion Animal Board will provide the necessary expertise and also focus for companion animal issues and those who care for these animals. It's a people and animal issue. This board will have 13 board members representing multiple professions in animal and human welfare. It will have three primary duties: enforcement of regulatory laws. The board will enforce the dog and cat breeder law and also the kennel and dealer law, which licenses animal shelters. Two, education and communication. It will promote responsible pet ownership. Three, services and resources. It will also work with nonprofits, businesses, community for delivery of services statewide. This will be supported by a grant program, which is funded by a specialty license plate. And as for issues, there are many and they're growing. Just to name a few, there are communities in Minnesota in need of animal shelters, social workers who work with therapy animals want program assistance, animal rescues want standards for their industry, organizations like Meals on Wheels see the need and support a pet food bank, veterinarians want to help their clients with accessible vet care. There's mental health professionals, local governments, emergency services, and academics. There are multiple stakeholders with different needs and issues. So the Companion Animal Board will be able to listen to these needs and collaborate and lead. Now there's a bit of misinformation being spread, just to clarify a few points. The control of animal disease, no changes. It remains with the Board of Animal Health. Veterinary practices, no changes, remains with the Board of Veterinary Medicine. Livestock, they're excluded. Gifts and grants, the same language is found in other state agencies. This board, like others, would follow laws for conflict of interest and ethics. And the definition of companion animal, that is already in existing law, and it's been there for decades. The definition is broad, which is exactly why the Companion Animal Board is needed. This is about dogs and cats, but there are other animals, pet rabbits, pet hamsters.
Can you wrap up, Ms. Olson? Can you?
Yes. It is a state agency dedicated to companion animals and to people caring for these animals. I ask for your support of House File 208. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Olson. The next person I have on my list is Dr. Graham Grayshaw. And Representative Nash, do you want to, is it this person or?
Yeah, I had a question directly for Ms. Olson and it'll, thank you.
Thank you, Representative Nash, proceed then.
Yeah, so Ms. Olson, a question for you. You articulate that the concern and your interest for this from Animal Folks MN is strictly for companion animals and that your organization does not advocate for anything in the agricultural society or agricultural business. Is that correct? I just want to make sure.
Ms. Olson.
Hello, Chair Nelson, Representative Natch. Yes, this bill actually has an exclusion for farm and agricultural animals, livestock. So it's strictly for companion animals.
Representative Nash.
And Mr. Chair, and thank you. Well, Ms. Olson, I did a little research on Animal Folks MN, and on your issues tab on your webpage, you have a large area decrying things that are in the agricultural purview. And I have reservations about this bill, given that you are not going to be Senate confirmable and that you will have rulemaking authority, and that your organization already on your webpage talks very clearly about ways to slow down the agricultural meat producing businesses. So I would just point that out to members that that's highly problematic, and that this is something that's going to have to get addressed through amendments, and this is troubling. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Nash. With that, Ms. Olson, do you want to short response?
Yeah, certainly. Chair, Representative Nash. Yeah, we are now looking at reducing meat producing industry. What this bill is doing, and Animal Folks supports this bill because of the need to be able to address companion animal issues. The rulemaking right now is directed specifically to the two laws, dog cat breeder law and animal shelter law. The focus is companion animals. Thank you.
Representative Skowski, to this testifier to the bill.
Testifier, Mr. Chair. Ms. Olson, thank you for your testimony. Can you tell us what are the issues with companion animals that you think that this big layer of government dictating to others is going to solve?
Ms. Olson.
Chair Nelson, Representative Drazkowski. Multiple different issues. We actually find this to be more effective. Creating a state board, there's a lot of research to be able to determine where it should go. And rather than sending issues, for instance, to the Board of Animal Health, which would then spread their mission because their mission is disease, we felt that it was better to pull these things away, which actually became more effective, rather than throwing more things on a state agency that is beyond their scope and their skill set. As far as different issues, I mentioned a number from we've been interviewing multiple professions over the past years, from animal shelter who need standards, to social workers who really work with therapy animals, to animal rescue groups who want standards, to mental health professionals who want this to be able to disseminate their information for people with depression, anxiety, PTSD, Meals on Wheels we've been talking to, who really go into homes and find people giving up their food to their pets. That's why they want a pet food bank. Local governments who really have no place to go to be able to get information. So there are many, many issues, and because the industry has actually exploded, more people have a dog or cat than children in Minnesota. So this particular organization, this particular state board will be able to address these issues that keep growing and evolving. Thank you.
Representative Drazkowski.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Ms. Olson, so you outlined that there's a bunch of groups that want to have this state board to share their agenda. That's what I heard in your answer. And I don't know what those agendas are, but what is the problem you're trying to solve with the creation of all of this government? What problem that constituents in my district would have around their pets is this going to solve?
Ms. Olson.
Chair Nelson, Representative Drazkowski. The problem for state government, and as Representative Freiberg said, this is a structural issue. There has been no place to put issues like this when it comes before the legislature. For instance, when the dog and cat breeder bill was debated, the authors were frustrated. Where do they put it? They didn't have a place to put it. Who really had the expertise in companion animal knowledge and health and welfare? As far as your community or other communities, again, when we talk to different people throughout different communities, needs vary. Some have animal shelters, some don't. That impacts pet owners. I just had a call from somebody up in northern Minnesota who said they didn't have access to veterinary care for their dog. They had to drive 3 hours away. These are the kind of issues that can be discussed by a state agency working with others in other sectors, just to be able to lead these discussions, understand the problems, and be able to work with communities.
Representative Discalzi, we've got other testifiers. Let's move on to those. And
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to close up, and I don't have a question again. Thank you, Ms. Olson. It really sounds like what I gathered from what you said is that this board will help people determine how to make decisions around their pets, and will make decisions for them is what it sounded like to me. And I don't think that's where we want to go. But thank you, Ms. Olson. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Druskowski. The next person we have on the list is Dr. Graham Brashaw.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Dr. Graham Brashaw. I am Director of Veterinary Medicine, Head Vet at Animal Humane Society, our local shelter in Twin Cities. We've got two clinics and three shelters around the cities. We actually directly work with, in those facilities, about 35, 40,000 animals a year, and outside the shelters, probably 100,000 animals in Minnesota each year. I also served a term as a veterinary member of the Board of Animal Health. In our day-to-day work, I see a lot of the frontline companion animal concerns and needs, and the Board of Animal Health, they exist to deal with dangerous and zoonotic disease concerns in the state, but the issues we see daily with companion animals, their caregivers, the communities, go well beyond this disease concerns. Big ones on my side, I've seen managing community cats. There's a lot of outdoor cats, unowned, that communities have difficulty dealing with, that we try to deal with at Animal Humane Society, but having a state agency to work with would really be a great help. Access to veterinary medicine is the biggest one for me. Just within 10 miles of our clinics, it's low estimate, but probably 300,000 dogs and cats don't get access to vet care. Just within that radius, and it's mostly financial, but it's also transport and many other things that keep them from getting the care they need. Companion Animal Board will provide a nice centralized, organized place within the state with specific expertise for these issues. The resources can help the people, the organizations, cities across Minnesota to effectively meet these needs. Thinking of needs, 70% of families have pets, 95% of them say they're part of the family. And it's a disease, it's a concern that are broader than disease, and really think it deserves a place in state government. That is why I urge support of House File 208.
Thank you, Mr. Brashaw. The next person I have on the list is Pat Trunjan.
Mr. Chair, can I ask a question, Mr. Brashaw?
Representative Druskowski, I didn't see your hand. Go ahead, Representative Druskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Brashaw, so how can a state agency deal with extra cats in a community better than the community itself?
Mr. Brashaw.
There is coordination of that care and even resources for costs of surgery. There it is. It is even an access to vet care issue. And thinking of, we recently actually helped work with Badness Heights on the shelter side of things of my day-to-day work. And it's something that we could not deal with as thoroughly as we wanted to because of lack of resources. At our shelter, with the resources Badness Heights had, it's something that pooling our resources, working together to stay with it, can help deal with those kind of cat issues.
Representative Druskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Mr. Brashaw, I just don't understand. I mean, so if I'm in Community X, if I live in Albertville or wherever I live, I have to call St. Paul to figure out how to deal with the excess cat issues that we have in our community. There's veterinarians like you right down the road. In Albertville, I would expect. This doesn't, your testimony doesn't seem to be congruent with
the bill. Anyway, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Brayshaw.
Members, I'd like to get through the rest of the testifiers, and we have other bills. But Representative, again, the next person on my list is Pat Trunjan. We can save our questions till the end of the testimony. We may have to move the rest of this bill to another day because we have other bills that we need to get out of here today. Mr. Trunjan, identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Nelson and members of the committee. My name is Pat Trunjan, and I am the Roseville City Manager. In my role as City Manager, I'm supportive of House File 208. Currently, when there is a problem or issue around companion animals in a city, such as pet store licensing, regulation of doggy daycares, or community feral cats, there is no state agency for city leaders to go to for information or find expertise on how to address the issue. For example, in 2016, as the Roseville City Council was addressing numerous citizen concerns regarding the regulation of pet stores in Roseville, we quickly found there is no direct state oversight on pet stores. As a result, we were left on our own in determining what the city could do regarding pet stores. I only bring up that experience with pet stores to highlight what a great resource the Companion Animal Board would have been to us and will be for other cities moving forward. The ability for local governments to receive grants would also be helpful. As was just referenced, in the past year, the city of Van Ness Heights struggled on how to address the large amount of feral cats in their community. Having a companion animal board to provide guidance and potentially provide funds to help educate the community about feral cats and ways to deal with them would be very helpful to local governments. As we've seen during the COVID pandemic, more and more of our residents have companion animals. The creation of the state companion animal board will be a wonderful benefit to the state's residents and will be a great assistance to local governments in addressing community companion animal issues. With that in mind, I ask that you support House File 208. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Trunjan. The next I have Elaine Hansen. And again, try and keep your testimony to less than 3 minutes, between 2 and 3. Ms. Hansen.
I'm sorry, I had trouble unmuting, but I guess I'm okay now.
I can hear you now, fine. Please identify yourself for the record.
I'm Elaine Hansen. I'm a longtime pet owner and the volunteer legislative chair of the Minnesota Pet Breeders Association. And it's on the association's behalf that I testify today. There are numerous reasons we oppose the proposal to create a companion animal board, which I'll call CAB from here on. There are way more reasons than I can possibly address in 2 or 3 minutes. So I'll just comment on two. The CAB advocates say that the Board of Animal Health is concerned only with diseases and not with how animals are cared for. I believe that's incorrect. The statutes articulate certain measures of care that all companion animal owners must provide. The statutes also set very specific standards of care for animals kept in pet shelters, which are called kennels in the statute. And they also have very specific standards for those belonging to commercial dog and cat breeders. The Board of Animal Health has been enforcing standards of care by kennels, animal shelters, since 1968. In 2014, the legislature enacted standards of care to be applied to dogs and cats used for breeding on a commercial scale. And the standards are essentially the same as those for pets in shelters. Given the difference between owned and unowned pets' needs, there are some absolutely necessary differences. But in terms of the overall environment and the kind of care they get, they're virtually the same. If the CAB advocates say that the Board of Animal Health doesn't require adequate care for owned animals in licensed facilities, we're left to wonder, why are those same care standards acceptable for unowned pets in shelters, but not for dogs and cats whose owners have years of experience caring for and caring about them? Another issue we see, we are also concerned about the bill's impact on pet breeding and on purpose-bred dogs in particular. The bill to create a companion animal board clearly says that such a board would be the primary authority for regulating companion animals in the state. I believe that one of last night's amendments modified companion animals in the state to refer just to dogs and cats. I may be mistaken about that. It was hard to find time to slot that series of amendments into their place in the bill. The bill says that the Companion Animal Board would, and I quote, collect, analyze, and disseminate quantitative and qualitative data relating to companion animals in Minnesota. Any of you who have dogs and cats in your homes, that means your pet. How they would collect and analyze qualitative data about dogs and cats is simply beyond my imagination. I've been a pet owner for close to 70 years. In previous years, the CAB advocates had tried to persuade the legislature to repeal the provision protecting commercial breeder business records and animal premises data from public disclosure, explaining that they need to know about breeders' operations so they can, and these are the words they have used, so they can inform the public who they should not buy pets from. More than 50% of Minnesota households own dogs or cats, some own both, and there are more households that have companion animals of other species. The CAB would have authority to collect and analyze information about every companion animal owned by anyone for any purpose, and to disseminate that quantitative and qualitative data to the public. We see this as a thinly veiled device to steer people away from certain breeders or from selected, health-tested, purpose-bred dogs in general, so customers or consumers would have to buy random source pets of unknown backgrounds from animal shelters or totally unregulated rescue groups.
Ms. Hansen, if you can come to a conclusion, that'd be great.
Yes. Knowledgeable breeders take great care to produce and provide healthy, happy pets to join happy, healthy households. That's a tip of the iceberg view of our concerns about this bill. If any of you want the underwater view and you're free on Saturday and Sunday, we can maybe get together and cover that. Thank you for your attention and consideration.
Thank you, Ms. Hansen. Thank you for your testimony. The next person I have on my list is a Dr. Nancy Peterson. And if you want to identify yourself for the record or proceed with your tape, with your testimony.
Chair, representatives, good morning and thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today. I am Nancy L. Peterson. I am a doctor of veterinary medicine. I'm the president of the Minnesota Veterinary Medical Association. I am a practicing ambulatory medicine veterinarian in New Ulm, Minnesota. I work on horses, beef and dairy cows, sheep, goats, llamas, alpacas, deer, and will vaccinate the odd farm dog or cat when needed, or even the not so odd one. The MVMA has been looking at this Companion Animal Board bill in various forms for 3 to 4 years, as it has come before our Board of Directors and our Governmental Affairs Committee. We have researched it, studied it, and considered it. We have consulted with our membership, the Minnesota Department of Health, the Board of Animal Health, the College of Veterinary Medicine, Minnesota Federated Humane Societies, and many other groups that this bill will impact. At various times in the early stages of this process, it was attempted to get the original driving forces of this bill to consider other options, such as a committee on the current Board of Animal Health, expanding the then 5-member board to more specifically include not just a veterinarian, but namely a small animal and a large animal veterinarian. Each effort was rebuffed. The only option for the supporters was a board, a whole new governmental agency with wide powers and impressive ability to collect funds and with vague goals and responsibilities. After all this, we have come to the conclusion time and again that this is a misguided bill that will jeopardize our state's ability to care for the health and welfare of the animals of our state, both domestic and wild. It will increase interagency conflict by interfering with the running of the Minnesota Federated Humane Society, the Minnesota Board of Animal Health, and the Department of Natural Resources. It will divert resources and money from these established and already frequently underfunded agencies and will confuse the public and my veterinary colleagues as to which agency to contact when they need assistance. Our current Board of Animal Health is well respected nationally for its handling of animal health and welfare, part of which is handling the breeder bill since its passing, and it has been quite willing to work with us on the newly proposed and accepted Companion Animal Task Force on the Minnesota Board of Animal Health. And I would also like to add a few other comments. Miniature horses and deer and pigs and goats, I all have them as pets in my practice, not just livestock. And canine brucellosis is a zoonotic disease. This bill will give the Companion Animal Board direct control over the testing and control programs for that disease in kennels. And the issues brought up by the Office of the Legislative Auditor have been addressed with the Minnesota Board of Animal Health, as is stated in the 2019 report. I might also point out that the handling of CWD is already under two agencies, the Minnesota Board of Animal Health and the Department of Natural Resources. I do not think it's going to help the situation to have a third agency dealing with chronic wasting disease, as there are pet deer, and if their welfare and housing is going to be affected by this, that is definitely going to affect the handling of those diseases. So again, thank you very much for your time this morning.
Thank you, Dr. Peterson. And members, with that, we've got a bunch of amendments. We've got other bills that we need to get to. I'm going to lay this bill over for consideration on another day, either an evening or maybe on a Friday, another meeting. So this seems like there's a lot more to this than we can get taken care of here today with this meeting. So members, I'm laying House File 208 on the table for future consideration. Thank you, members. Thank you for all that came to testify. The next bill, actually, we got two bills that are on the agenda, and Representative Votney, House File 1968, and Representative Freiberg, I'll present this together because their two bills are identical. And I'm going to start with, I'll move House File 1968 to be referred to the General Register. And Mr. Representative Novotny, if you want to explain your bill. Representative Novotny.
Chair Nelson, are you there?
I'm here. I can hear you fine. Great. Welcome to the committee today. And
hey. I apologize for the delay, Chair Nelson. I was in a different meeting with Chair Mariani. So thank you for your patience. Thank you for allowing me to bring this bill forward. I think the Autism Awareness Day is an opportunity for us to find out what would really mean for people with autism, to find out how much they can contribute and to celebrate their abilities. With me, I have Carly. Carly's going to testify. She is a passionate advocate for people with disabilities. She's employed by Fairview Princeton Hospital, and she accesses employment supports through Options of Big Lake. And she would like to tell you what having Minnesota designated as April 2nd as Autism Awareness Day would mean to her.
Welcome to the committee, Miss. A lot. Identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony. Are you there, Carly? I think we might have lost her. I don't see her on my list.
She was on earlier.
I don't see her on the list that's okay. Currently logged in, so there might be an issue there. I see we have an amendment, and I think it's the same amendment for both bills. So I'll move the A1 amendment, and Representative Bondi, do you know what that amendment does?
It's just a technical correction on the coding of the language.
I see. I see. Delete 1051, 10.551, and replace it with 10.552.
That's correct, sir.
Just a corrected error. So I'll move the A1 amendment. Members, Do you want to, everybody wants to unmute and we'll vote on this? All in favor of the A1 amendment to House File 1968, please say aye.
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 Opposed? The ayes have it. And Representative Freiberg, I know you got the same bill, and I know you actually had two bills of this, one from last year and one that you did this year, and they all seem to be identical. So Representative Freiberg, if you want to say what you want to say on the bill here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, there was some confusion over the bill about the advocates and lining up bills with Senate authors, so there were multiple versions introduced. I don't have a whole lot to add, but I will say, one important component of this bill to me personally is the fact that it's also talking about, it talks about autism awareness. I think most people are aware of the existence of autism, but it also talks about autism acceptance. There's still a lot of stigma attached to autism. You still have people spreading the lie that vaccines cause autism. You have people suggesting it's some sort of injury. I'm the parent of a child with autism, so those are things that I take personally. People with autism lead full and rich lives and are contributing members of society. So I think it's important just that we acknowledge that and that we encourage not only awareness of autism but also acceptance. So this is just an important bill to me. I'm glad Representative Novotny is carrying it as well, and I'm happy to see either version of it pass.
And I see Carly's back on. Welcome to the committee. Ms. Malott, if you want to identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony. And you're currently muted. There you go. Great.
Good morning. As everybody knows, my name's Carly.
Can you give your full name for the record?
Carly Malott.
Thank you.
Yes.
Proceed,
so
then.
Basically what I was told to talk about was like autism and what it means. So my personal life has not been affected too negatively. It's been challenging, yes, but I've had a lot of supports to get to a lot more of an understanding. And I mean, I'm just like any other person. Nobody should be thinking that people with autism are different. I've done a lot of advocating and a lot of work for that. And I'm supportive of continuing to do that.
Thank you, Ms. Malott. Thanks for your testimony. Now, members, do we have any questions on the bill, or the bills? Seeing no hands popping up, I will renew my motion that House File 1968, as amended, be referred to the General Register. Mr. Brinks, do you want to take the roll?
Thank you. Representative Nelson, or excuse me, Chair Nelson.
Aye.
Nelson votes aye. Vice Chair Carlson.
Carlson, aye.
Carlson votes aye. Representative Nash.
Nash, aye.
Nash votes aye. Representative Bonner.
Bonner, aye.
Bonner votes aye. Representative Drazkowski.
Aye.
Drazkowski votes aye. Representative Elkins.
Elkins, aye.
Elkins votes aye. Representative Greenman.
Aye.
Greenman votes aye. Representative Cleavorne.
Cleavorne, aye.
Cleavorne votes aye. Representative Posnick.
Aye.
Posnick votes aye. Representative Mason.
Mason, aye.
Mason votes aye. Representative New Brindley. Representative Pawlowski.
Pawlowski, aye.
Pawlowski votes aye. Representative Quam.
Yes.
Quam votes aye. Representative New Brindley. Chair Nelson, with a vote of 12 ayes and one abstain, the motion prevails.
The motion prevails. The bill is on its way to the General Register. And now, members, to be fair, we're going to we don't need more testimony on this because we already heard it. But I'm going to move House File 2903 and to be referred to the General Register. And I'm going to move the Do we need to move the same amendment, Representative Freiberg, or has yours already been corrected?
I would suggest Mr. Gehring might be the person to ask.
Mr. Gehring, do we need to add that same amendment to Representative Freiberg's bill?
Mr. Chair, no. So the coding error was just on Representative Otney's bill. So Representative Freiberg's is good to go as is.
Thank you, Mr. Gary. So members, we just said we already heard with this bill. So it's the same bill as Mr. Novotny's, Representative Otney's. So Mr. Brinks, if you want to take the roll on House File 2903, I'll renew my motion that House File 2903 be referred to the General Register. Mr. Brinks.
Thank you. Chair Nelson.
Aye.
Nelson votes aye. Vice Chair Carlson.
Carlson, yes.
Carlson votes aye. Representative Nash.
Aye.
Nash votes aye. Representative Bonner.
Bonner, aye.
Bonner votes aye. Representative Drazkowski.
Aye.
Drazkowski votes aye. Representative Elkins.
Elkins, aye.
Elkins votes aye. Representative Greenman.
Aye.
Greenman votes aye. Representative Cleborn.
Cleborn, aye.
Cleborn votes aye. Representative Kosnick.
Kosnick, aye.
Kosnick votes aye. Representative Mason.
Mason, aye.
Mason votes aye. Representative New Brindley. Representative Pawlowski.
Pawlowski, aye.
Pawlowski votes aye. Representative Quam.
C.
Quam votes aye. Representative New Brindley. Chair, with a vote of 12 ayes and 1 abstain, the motion prevails.
The motion prevails. The bill is on its way to the General Register. Thank you, Representative Freiberg. Next, we have in our committee, this must be the day for Paul's, but House File 2162, Representative Torkelson's amendment. Representative Mason, do you want to move the committee report, the vision report?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I would like to move the amendment. It did pass.
The division report, yeah.
The division report.
You're muted again.
Sorry. Yes. I will move the motion, move this bill. It did pass in our committee.
Representative Mason moves the division report from the local government committee or subcommittee. Members, if you want to unmute, all in favor of the division report, please say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
All opposed? The ayes have it. With that, Representative Mason, you want to move the House File 2162? You're muted again. I'll move House File 2162 to be referred to the General Register.
Thank you.
Representative Torkelson, you want to describe your bill? I see you have
a question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I trust I'm coming through loud and clear.
I can hear you great.
Thank you for hearing House File 2162. This legislation addresses expenses associated with the cleanup of tax forfeited properties, which have been a challenge for counties statewide. When taxes go unpaid on a property in Minnesota, the land is turned over to the state. However, counties end up being responsible for the administration costs and of returning these properties to productive taxable property or public use. The cost to clean up and manage these sites can be significant, and yet there are few resources to fund this work and limited ability to recoup the funds counties invest. This legislation will mitigate the financial burden and support more active attention to properties in the program. I have one testifier today to tell you more about the management of tax forfeited properties and this proposal. I also have a second person online. Heather Bessler from Ramsey County is online and available to answer questions. Heather represents MACO, the Minnesota Association of County Officers, and the Minnesota Association of County Auditors, Treasurers, and Finance Officers. Greg Bernou from Carlton County is my testifier, Mr. Chair, and I'd be happy if you would recognize him.
I will, and just before we go to him, I got it also with Jeff Strand. Question is whether he's here or not. I haven't seen him.
I do not think Mr. Strand will be with us this morning. He's testified on the bill in other committees.
Thank you, Representative Torkelson. Mr. Bernou, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony. You're muted, sir. We can't hear you. still can't hear you. And it doesn't appear that you're muted. So something with your headphones?
I know.
I can hear you now.
Okay, thank you. I must have pulled the jack. Anyways, my name is Gregory Bernou. I'm the County Land Commissioner for Carleton County. I manage the tax forfeited lands in the Carleton County for the County Board of Commissioners. I also serve as the past chair for Minnesota Association of County Land Commissioners, stretching from Pine County to Becker County to Lake of the Woods County, over to Cook County and back down. In 2021, the Association of Minnesota Counties, through their district meetings across the state, identified blighted conditions and tax forfeited properties as a tier one issue. In response to that, it was decided to seek legislation to set up the language in HF 2162 because blighted properties affect all 87 counties across the state. HF 2162 does give the county boards in all these 87 counties a mechanism to roll over surplus tax forfeited funds to pay for the cleanup of blighted and polluted properties. This is important because the tax forfeited fund in all counties start the year at $0, and by statute 22 end the year at $0. We do not have a chance to roll over dollars, and we do not burden the property tax levy with these funds. This is important because sometimes these cleanups from a simple house that's in one of our small rural communities can cost tens of thousands of dollars to clean up due to the lead, asbestos, formaldehyde found in these houses that could be 80, 90 years old, to mega sites in Minneapolis, St. Paul that could be Superfund sites. The cleanup for these has to come out of the tax forfeited fund. The issue becomes when we sell these properties after cleaning them up, we can spend tens of thousands of dollars, but we will only get hundreds of dollars back, and especially important in these small rural cities, such as some of the cities here in Carleton County, where we are seeing an exodus of our population from these small villages to the larger metro areas of Duluth, Grand Rapids, Bemidji, maybe even Minneapolis, and on occasion to St. Cloud. So in closing, MECLC, the County Land Commissioners, with AMC's support, ask for your support in passing 2162. And I'll take any questions.
Any questions for the author or Mr. Bernou? Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Bernou. Mr. Bernou, I know we're short on time here, but could you quickly remind us how the tax forfeit process works, if you could, with an eye on the question in my mind is, would this remove any good faith work that county governments do with these eventually tax forfeited owners? In trying to get them to continue to retain ownership of their land.
Mr. Bernou.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Senator or Representative Drazkowski. I hope I'm not foreshadowing an election run. But this bill wouldn't foreshadow some issues with the larger people who let these properties go for not payment of taxes. We do have an ability to tap into the Minnesota Pollution Controls funding source for petroleum cleanup, some school cleanups, whatnot, and over time maybe get that money back through that venue. But for me and my county, I would say for every source that I get where a school building may go forfeit because a developer bought a closed school to try to turn into low-income housing, those are few and far between. I have so many houses that I knocked down. That's where my issue is, and I cannot go back because the people have either moved or passed on. But there are some sources. This just gives us another major tool to clean up. Probably what is the major problem of cleanup is the small rural lots, small houses, lot and block in any type of village. I hope that answers.
Senator Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Bernou. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions? If not, I'll renew my motion that House File 2162 be referred to the General Register. Mr. Brinks, take the roll, please.
Thank you. Chair Nelson.
Aye.
Nelson votes aye. Vice Chair Carlson.
Carlson, aye.
Carlson votes aye. Representative Nash.
Nash, aye.
Nash votes aye. Representative Bonner.
Bonner, aye.
Bonner votes aye. Representative Drazkowski.
Aye.
Drazkowski votes aye. Representative Elkins.
Elkins votes aye.
Elkins votes aye. Representative Greenman.
Aye.
Greenman votes aye. Representative Cleborne.
Born aye.
Cleborne votes aye. Representative Kosnick.
Kosnick aye.
Kosnick votes aye. Representative Mason.
Mason aye.
Mason votes aye. Representative New Brindley. Representative Pawlowski.
Pawlowski aye.
Pawlowski votes aye. Representative Quam.
Aye.
Quam votes aye. Representative New Brindley. Chair Nelson with that, 12 ayes and one abstained, the motion prevails.
Motion prevails. The bill's on its way to the General Register. Thank you, Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry I didn't get to hear my lengthy closing remarks, but it's your loss.
then we would be able to get to Representative Detmer's bill, and I know he's got a 20-minute presentation on this bill. So, anyway, with that,
Nash votes no.
Representative Mason, do you want to do the make the motion to adopt the division report?
I so move.
Representative Mason moves the adoption of the division report from the local government subcommittee. All in favor of the report, please unmute and please vote aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed? The ayes have it. I'll move House File 2162 to be referred to the General Register. Welcome to committee, Mr. Representative Detmer. And I heard this bill in veterans. I believe it's the same bill, but I'll proceed with your 20-minute testimony. Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and the committee members. No, this is not going to be a 20-minute testifying here. But, Mr. Chair, House File 3001 was brought to me by the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers. And many, you know, as you know, I've carried a lot of veterans' bills over the years. And this is something that was a surprise to me, that certain branches of the military were left out. So under the current law, county recorders are required to record certificates of military discharge from the United States Army, Navy, Marine Corps without charge. This bill expands the requirement that county recorders record certificates of military discharge from any branch of the U.S. Armed Forces without any charge. And the effect of the bill, it expands the current requirement to now to include the Air Force, the Coast Guard, and the Space Guard. And I just want to make it clear to the committee is that to understand that the county recorders are already filing all military discharge certificates without charging a fee to the veteran. So so what this bill is doing is codifying the current practice, and it won't cost the counties anything to make this change. And I have one testifier today, and I would like to introduce Greg Peterson, and he's with the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers, and he is also a veteran service officer himself. So, Mr. Peterson.
And before we get to Mr. Peterson, I erred in when I made my motion, so I'm going to withdraw that motion, and I'm going to move to refer House File 3001 to the General Register. Not the previous bill. I looked at my script wrong, and I said the wrong number. So now that the bill's before us, welcome to the committee, Mr. Peterson. If you can give me a short minute to 2 minutes on testimony, and then we can get this bill voted on and out of here. Mr. Peterson, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. By the way, I see your artist depiction over your right shoulder there is a veteran's print. I like that. Anyway, as Representative Detmer had said, yes, 1919, when the bill was written, when the law was put into place, that's the only thing we had was the Army, Navy, and Marines. And it just simply hasn't been updated. I'm hunting around for a couple of DD-214s this morning to help my customers. Everyone that gets out of the military is told, get this recorded. Take it to your home county. Take it in and get it recorded. As we said, there's no indication that recorders have been charging. They've just been going along with all the branches of the service there are. If they did charge, it'd be about $40. It'd be similar to taking a marriage certificate to the recorder's office. Death certificates are recorded there, you know, land deeds and things like that. This bill by Representative Detmer just makes it all inclusive for the armed forces of the United States to be included in discharge recording at no cost. That's all I have for you. If you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer them.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson. I don't see any hands popping up for questions. Representative Detmer, you've explained the bill entirely, so we'll go to a vote. So I'll renew my motion that House File 3001 be referred to the General Register. And Mr. Brinks, do you want to take the roll?
Thank you. Chair Nelson.
Aye.
Nelson votes aye. Vice Chair Carlson.
Carlson, aye.
Carlson votes aye. Representative Nash.
Nash, aye.
Nash votes aye. Representative Bonner.
Bonner, aye.
Bonner votes aye. Representative Drazkowski.
Aye.
Drazkowski votes aye. Representative Elkins.
Elkins, aye.
Elkins votes aye. Representative Greenman.
Aye.
Greenman votes aye. Representative Cleborne. Representative Kosnick.
Kosnick, aye.
Kosnick votes aye. Representative Mason.
You're muted, Representative Mason.
Mason, aye.
Mason votes aye. Representative New Brindley. Representative Pulaski.
Pulaski, aye.
Pulaski votes aye. Representative Quam.
Aye, aye.
Quam votes aye. Representative Cleborne. Representative New Brindley. Chair Nelson with 11 ayes and 2 abstain, the motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Brinks. With that, the motion prevails. The bill is referred to the General Register. Thank you for bringing the bill, Representative Detmer. And members, we have a meeting next Tuesday. We got 4 bills up. There may be more bills added. But with that, members, unless there's any long questions, we are adjourned.